This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff. Stanton's prize-winning crossword puzzle setter Matt Gaffney says his brain was evidently hardwired to create puzzles.
The puzzle is still a puzzle to you. It's what is it that has to be done as a puzzle in song?
I wrote a little booklet of puzzles when I was, according to my mom, 3 years old, and it has a little word find, a little word search, a little crossword puzzle, a little connect the dots, and a little anagram page. I think I must have seen most of that somewhere. I didn't come up with it on my own, but I was attracted to it and interested in it at a very young age. When I was 13, I have an older sister, and she started to bring home magazines, Dell magazines, Penny Press, of crossword puzzles and a lot of other types of puzzles in there. But I really took to the crosswords, and I have a hyper-competitive personality, so I figured I could write one better than these. So I just started sending them into the magazines. And after a couple rejections, they gave me some good constructive criticism, and then they started to accept them. And from then I thought, well, this would be cool if I could make this into an actual job. That's a long story, but I did make it work in the end.
When they offered you constructive criticism, what was that? What were you not doing that you should?
Okay, I can tell you exactly. It was for a magazine called Dell Champion Crossword Puzzles. This would have been 1986. There's a certain type of crossword puzzle theme called a rebus theme, where in certain squares in the grid, instead of a letter going there, some drawing or certain letters or a number perhaps can go in there. For example, if you had a rebus theme where the solver had to put an ampersand in several of the squares in the grid, standing for the letters A and D, you could have a three-letter answer clued as Halloween stuff, and the answer is candy. Only three letters, because C, the middle letter is an and, ampersand, and then a Y at the end. So these are pretty common now, but back in 86, they were not as common. And I had one that involved putting a little key, K-E-Y, into certain squares. So you have phrases like monkey around, where you had M-O-N, little key, around, and so on. And I had a couple of little inelegant things in there. So the editor pointed out to me a couple of things that made this less than perfect.
And what was inelegant? Can you describe it?
Yeah. One of the finer points is to split the keyword in different ways. So let's say you were having a crossword where the rebus keyword was USA. You could use just words that have USA all contained in it, like crusade or a sausage pizza or Susan the name. But it's more fun if you split that up in certain ways. Like there was a great running back called Marcus Allen.
Yes.
Or you could even use the Shakespeare play Titus Andronicus. So it splits it by having the first word end in the U.S. and then the second word start with the A.
I want to say one thing right now. You're not looking at notes. And you are rattling stuff off. I'm curious about your brain because it's wired differently than mine.
Well, there is a common link among crossword people that when we see a word, especially a new, interesting-looking word, our mind tends to anagram it, reverse it, chop it up in different ways. In the movie Wordplay, which is a 2006 crossword documentary, one of my crossword idols, a guy named Merle Regal, is interviewed, and he's going down the street driving with the documentary maker, and he's pointing out anagrams of things that he passes by, like Dunkin' Donuts becomes Unkind Donuts if you put the D at the end instead of the beginning. There's an extermination company called Terminix, and whenever I see one of their trucks, my brain makes that word intermix because that's an anagram of it. I think if I ever write an autobiography, I'm going to title it The Words Won't Leave Me Alone. That's pretty much how it is. You're always on low-level theme antenna.
Is it fun?
I guess it's fun, but I've never known anything else. Maybe to have a brain that relaxed a little more might be a good break.
Let's go back to this three-year-old who made this puzzle. How did you learn to read and do puzzles by three?
My mom says that they didn't really teach me. I just started cutting letters out of the newspapers and magazines and putting them together. That was just some kind of natural inclination I had to move letters around and see what they made if you put them in different permutations.
You make your living at this?
Yes.
Have you ever made your living doing anything else?
Well, let's see. I'm 40 now. I haven't done other things since I was probably 25 or 26. But it was always something I was trying to do for a living, you know, from my late teens. And I got kind of fortunate because before the internet, it was kind of just a little branch of publishing. So obviously there's hierarchies. For me, the internet came along at a very good time. By the late 90s, the crossword software had matured to the point where somebody like me could go around and start to knock on doors. And I went to art websites and political websites and sports websites and said, hey, you need a weekly crossword full of golf entries or Picasso entries. And a bunch of them bit. So that's how I started to make a living at it.
So you're freelancing, essentially.
It's kind of a mishmash. I have regular, you know, weekly or monthly contracts with publications. I write many crossword books, but more and more my focus is becoming electronic puzzles because this is the way it's going, like everything else. More and more solvers are getting comfortable solving on their phones, on their laptops. So that is opening up whole new structures that constructors like me are trying to exploit. You know, back in the newspaper-only days, you had to physically print and mail a puzzle out to a solver. And before that, you had to market it to them. So it was this huge institutional structure you needed. But now the cost for all those things has been reduced to almost zero. So guys like me are able to make a living at it.
And how do you monetize it? How do you?
You think I'm going to tell you that on the radio? Give away all my crossword secrets.
Did I ask a rude, question?
No. There are many ways. And like other entrepreneurial endeavors, you have to constantly remake yourself and look out for opportunities. One of the ones I have started about 5 years ago, I began putting a free, a very high quality, I like to think, crossword on my website, which is xwordcontest.com. It's a crossword contest. So this is part of an overall campaign to just kind of build a fan base. And from there, monetizing it is easier once you have a few thousand people or tens of thousands of people who really appreciate what you do.
Okay. Look into your crystal ball. And where are you going, Mr. Crossword?
Well, we're not there yet, but I think the day will come in the next between 5 and 10 years when we'll wake up one day and the majority of crossword puzzles solved in this country will be done electronically. The old question used to be, you know, between solvers, pencil or pen, but nobody asks that anymore. Now the question people ask each other is, do you solve on paper or do you solve electronically? So that is certainly the future of crosswords. And like I said, the whole electronic revolution, internet, and all the software that's come with it, it's really enabling people like myself to cut out the publications to a certain degree and build our own groups that like what we do. And we're also able to be much more niche. You know, back when a person living in a medium-sized city might only have access to 3 or 4 different crosswords. But now online, you can have access to hipster music crosswords or music crosswords for people in their 60s or kids crosswords, you know, easy kids crosswords, tougher. You have all kinds of little niches. So that's an exciting aspect of this, too.
Going back to wordplay, almost all I know about setting crosswords comes from watching that. It's a wonderful documentary. What level of difficulty do you usually set?
It varies. My contest crossword is really aimed at the top 1 or 2% of solvers. These are pretty difficult.
That's your weekly one on your website.
That's my weekly one. I publish every Friday. You have to be a pretty good solver to work that. I should say maybe it's the top 5% of solvers. But anyway, there's a secondary puzzle attached to those crosswords called a meta puzzle, which is what makes them a contest instead of a regular crossword. But I also do other things because that's leaving 95% of solvers out of the picture. So what I also do is write a free daily mini puzzle, 11 by 13 squares, which is about 2/3 of the size of a normal daily size crossword. It's designed to be easy. I write it so my mom can solve it. If she can't solve it, then it's got words in it that I don't want in there because it's going to exclude a lot of people from figuring it out. We crossword writers labor under these delusions that people care if we sneak all these cool letters like X, Q, and Z, and J in the grid and have these clever little clues and stuff. And people like that. But the one thing that will bring people back to your crossword the next day is, were they able to solve it? If they were, they're very likely to come back. If they weren't, probably not.
So they want to be stretched but not baffled.
That's a good way to put it.
What is your proudest to date crossword accomplishment?
There's a thing called the Orca Awards, which is kind of like a Oscars for crossword puzzle writers. And I did win Puzzle of the Year, a couple years ago. And then I won Constructor of the Year last year. That was a nice recognition.
You're
a
rock star.
Well, you know, you like to be recognized by your colleagues.
And supposing you find the answer to... You'll find a link to Matt Gaffney's website, as well as one to Moving Day, his 2011 Orca-winning Puzzle of the Year, on the Spark page at WMRA.org. What is it that has to be done as a puzzle in song? Is what is it that has